Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Welcome to the Umbrella Hour. This is Dr. Ahn, clinical sexologist with Xander Keg, licensed social worker. I'm handing this over to you, Xander.
Thank you, Dr. Ahn. Our guest today is Mars Fernandez. Mars was born in Puerto Rico to Cuban parents and was raised in Miami, Florida, and he currently lives in North Carolina. He's been transitioning since 2018, but came out around 2016 as a trans man. Before transition, and as far back as he can remember, he's always had gender dysphoria. You can find Mars all over the interwebs at Twitter, YouTube, TikTok, and Rumble at Upper Hand Mars, and also on YouTube at Two Dudes Kinda. I love that name. Welcome to the show, Mars.
Hey, thank you so much for having me, and I'm glad you like that name. It's kind of supposed to be a bit of a joke. But yeah, I'm very happy to be here. Like I said, off the air, a little nervous, but just looking forward to having a good conversation with you guys, so thank you.
Absolutely. Well, hopefully the casual style that we go with our conversation, it will put you at ease. One of the things I thought would be interesting to talk about, because it's something that you and I share in common, is growing up in a Hispanic family. So you were born in Puerto Rico, you have Cuban parents, and you spent your, I guess, most of your life until you moved away in Miami, whereas I'm from California, my family is Mexican. And I'm first generation also. Well, yeah, first generation. I guess you're first generation because Puerto Rico is considered the United States.
Right, which people forget.
Yes. I think a lot of people have assumptions about what it means to grow up in a Hispanic family, especially as how we were before we transitioned. I don't know about you, but I was a very masculine woman, a lesbian, and people have assumptions about Mexican families and homosexuality. I would think that they would have the same kinds of assumptions with Cuban families. My story can't be further from that assumption. So I'm wondering, what was it like for you growing up in a Hispanic family?
Right. Yeah, I think we could relate on a lot of stuff as far as the environment you grow up in. With Hispanic families, I think more so they're 1,000% into traditional roles. Everything is family first and also tradition. What I recall from my childhood was I was very much a tomboy. I liked playing with the guys. I liked riding my bike off ramps. I liked climbing trees, all this stuff, which of course doesn't mean that I am a boy, but rather that I was definitely not like the other girls. So I definitely felt that at a young age, though I didn't really talk about it or describe it to anyone, because you don't really think about gender or any of that probably until you hit puberty. But prior to that, it seems like anything goes, whether you're a boy or girl. It's, for the most part, you're not thinking, you're just having fun. Until I hit puberty, there was never any, no, you can't do that or you shouldn't do that because you're a girl, words coming from my parents at all. It was actually, I think my mother is very much a tomboy. She was very much into just having fun out in the yard, doing whatever. She still to this day is the one that cuts the lawn. She's very much a tomboy, but when she goes out, it's a whole other take. She'll wear a dress, she'll dress up. And I think that idea was definitely introduced to me once I became a teenager. It's okay to be a tomboy at home, but when you go out, women are expected to present in such a way. They never really said just terrible things to me. They didn't make me feel wrong, I guess, for being a tomboy, but they definitely constantly seem to redirect me towards the other direction. So growing up, it was fun. I had an amazing childhood, I think. In my backyard, I was able to have fun with the guys. I was shirtless all the time. Again, anything went. It was a lot of fun, but I definitely rejected femininity and the idea of being a girl in a dress. Never cared about that. Did not want to be a princess. Didn't care about any of that stuff. So of course, when puberty hit, I started growing breasts. My parents were treating me differently. The guys were looking at me differently. Obviously, if you're a tomboy and that changes, it hits you hard. Whether you grow up to want to be trans or not, it definitely hits you hard and it impacts you. And I think it probably impacted me a lot harder than I thought at the time.
For most of my childhood, I was raised by a single father. And so I didn't have, at least within the home, that pressure to conform to femininity. But I learned later on, when I was probably in my 30s, actually, my father told me that my aunts were not happy with how tomboyish I was and continued to be into my adolescence. But my father did not let them talk to me about it. So he made sure that they didn't say anything about how they didn't like how I was dressing. My grandmother, she died when I was 13, but my paternal grandmother, she was a little more involved in my day-to-day care as almost like a babysitter for me for some years. And so she was quite disappointed in my tomboyishness, and I knew that. But for some reason, I didn't care. And I think it's partly because I knew she had no control over that. But her disappointment was very noticeable. She was pretty critical and she would mask it in ways like, why can't you be like your other cousins? Look at Margaret, look at Susan, look at Jeanette. Why can't you be more like them? And I just say, because I'm not. So I was kind of a smart aleck kid. For some reason, thankfully, my father didn't let it get too close to me. My mother, on the other hand, was also quite disappointed, but I didn't spend much time with her growing up. So it didn't really take. I didn't internalize any of those messages, thankfully.
That was the best, yeah. Childhood, I loved it. I wouldn't change anything about my childhood. It was amazing. My dad, though, to be fair, any comments he made were very mild, if any. He didn't really care too much. There were just some times where he would mention, like, oh, you probably shouldn't do that because that's not the way women behave, but very mild in comparison. My mother, however, was very much for enforcing traditional norms, which I always try to look at parents as though they had no idea what they were doing. They did the best they could. Obviously, there are some parents who are intentionally evil and do bad things to their kids, but for the most part, I think most parents have no idea what they're doing. They're doing the best they can. Certain things that I look back on and thought there were probably negative experiences that I dealt with as far as the things that they might have said and how they affected me. Today, as an adult, I don't want to hate my parents for anything that they could have done better. And also, they immigrated from Cuba in their 20s. They definitely had no idea what the heck they were doing, right? They were trying to flee communism to come here. And Cuba is very traditional. So if that's how they're raised and what they know, who am I to blame them for any minor mistakes they might have made? That's how I see it now. But it absolutely does affect kids. And I wish people would talk about that more. But even today, it seems like it's one extreme or the other. And as a middle child, I had a younger brother and an older sister. My older sister was very, very much feminine, everything you would want from a daughter. Then there was me, who was a black sheep of the family. I would see the way my parents would treat my sister and my brother, and it was always got the sense of, as a child, that being masculine as a boy, you get celebrated for that. Being feminine as a woman, you get celebrated as that. And then there was me, and it was just always kind of awkward. So that definitely obviously affected me. But like I said, I try not to hold it against my parents, even though I know that me transitioning was really hard on them. They still try to love me unconditionally the best they can.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Was there a time in your life, Mars, before you started your transition or before you even started identifying as a trans man, that you were in having a lesbian identity or part of a lesbian community or relationship?
I probably didn't start thinking about sexuality at all until middle school. Prior to that, my impression was, I'm supposed to like guys, but I want to just hang out with the guys. I didn't really look at them like that. I looked at men in a more, I appreciate men for certain things, but they can be strong and this and that. But I wasn't sexually attracted to men, but I definitely wanted to be. And again, I think a lot of that stems from when you grow up and you're a tomboy, right? When you grow up as a girl who is butch and not like the other girls, you see that the way they treat you is different, and you want to try to be like the other girls, or you want to try to date guys, not girls. And I certainly did try to do all of that, and it didn't work at all. It wasn't until probably early 20s that I finally just gave up and said, all right, clearly I am very attracted to women, and I need to stop thinking that anything could happen with a guy that isn't just a friendship. I didn't start being comfortable knowing what my sexuality was until my 20s. But I will say my 20s also included a lot of intoxication, as I struggled with this a whole lot. There was a lot of blackout nights because I didn't finding a girl to date back then anyways was very difficult because you had to go out. You had to go out, find them at lesbian events, and those were very, very dysphoric times for me because there I was uncomfortable in my body, not feeling like the other girls, but also trying to learn how to talk to a girl. I never really got to do that very much. And I'm surrounded by all these lesbians that are happy and want to celebrate themselves. And here I am. I'm not ready to celebrate anything because I'm still trying to figure out who I am. So,
Did your family know that you were leaning in that direction? Did you ever talk to them?
no, when it comes to anything related to lesbian or trans, I always keep that door pretty shut. I think they're awkward about it, so I just don't bother. And honestly, it would be awkward, so it's fine. However, I did absolutely try to keep it all secret. My plan was I'll just move out at some point or move away, and they'll deal with it from a distance is probably better. That didn't happen though. So I was in Miami, and my first girlfriend lived in Fort Lauderdale, which is about an hour away. And I didn't even have my own car then. So I would either get dropped off, take the train, go see her, or sometimes I would take my parents' car and go see her. But it's very much like a big secret and a lot of lying to obviously go see her, spend the night somewhere. Eventually, my mother found out. And the way that she handled it was, again, probably traumatic then, but I didn't really think about it. So she wanted me to talk to her about it, come out and just own up to it. But the way she did it was probably not the best. She took me to her friend who was a therapist. And I was talking to this psychologist who's a great psychologist. I love that guy. And by the way, she had lied. She asked me if I want to go to the doctor with her. And I was like, yeah, sure, I'll go with you. We end up at a freaking therapist. This is a plot twist. I see where this is going. And I was freaking out. And the guy was asking me questions that were clearly leaning towards, are you gay? Right? He was talking about his son and how his son is. I just didn't want to talk to him at all about it. And then she stepped in and I stepped out and he talked to her. And I could hear her through the door asking all these questions. She was confused. Oh, but I remember her playing with Barbies growing up. I remember her sometimes being okay hanging out with other girls. Obviously, these are all stereotypes, and Cubans love them. So there was a lot of that, a lot of confusion. And it was, I hate using this word because it's so loosely used now, but it was probably traumatic for me at the time, but I didn't think about it. And so the whole goal was to get me to understand that being gay is okay, but also at the same time, the other message was, but you're not. The way she saw it was, this is a phase. You're just a shy girl. This is awkward for you. You just haven't figured it out. You haven't grown up. That's what she thought. And then, to make matters worse, she wanted to meet my girlfriend. That was weird. Okay. So we go to that house, and she told them the same thing. It's like, oh, I think these are just two shy girls who don't know what they want, and they're still not quite sure yet. And my mother is very blunt, which is probably where I get it from. But she just looked at this girl's parents. Well, I guess on the bright side, at least she looks like a very classy lady and not like a hooker. Great, mom.
Oh my
Thanks.
gosh.
That's how I grew up. I had parents that were very straightforward, sometimes to a fault. The whole thing didn't stop me from liking women, didn't stop me from wanting to pursue this girl. Unfortunately, it was never a conversation that we brought up again. Afterwards, when she saw that it just kept happening, it was more of a look, just be well behaved. And I think her point was like, don't be a degenerate, right? Don't go out there. Nowadays, ironically enough, we see like having a kink and putting it out. And what she means by that is obviously, if I was out with a girlfriend and I was into BDSM, dragging a girl from a collar, that sort of thing, I think that's where they were coming from, but which I'm not into, to be clear. I'm not into that at all. However, my point is, my parents love me. Their perception, which I think a lot of not just Cubans, but maybe let's say conservatives or other Hispanic people, their perception of anything LGBT, to me, it's the most extreme version of it. I don't think they really look at it, oh, these could just be two men dating, getting married, living a normal life, or two women. I think their perception of it is still so very like 1930s. Like they think we're out here just doing disgusting things in the middle of the public street. And it's not the case all the time. I have to say all the time because nowadays it is the case. You see it sometimes at Pride, but for the most part, people that are attracted, same-sex attracted, just want the same boring life that straight people have. Just get married, just have your partner for life. That's it. But again, they didn't grow up like that, so I don't blame them. I know that all these layers that I didn't think about before transition probably played a part into why I feel more comfortable like this, why maybe my dysphoria got so bad that I feel more comfortable like this, and so on.
That's interesting to think about it in that way. When I think back about my family, of course, there's a big age difference between you and I. And so when I was a teenager, it was the late 70s and early 80s. And I remember I had girlfriends starting in middle school and then high school. And I would bring them to family functions. So we were a very large family. So we didn't meet in people's homes for the most part, we went to parks. And so I would just bring my girlfriend along, and then I would introduce her by her first name to everybody, and they were very welcoming. I never said, "This is my girlfriend," or at the time, people were using the word lover, which I always hated. I never used that word. But I never actually said to any member of my family, except my mother and my father, I never said, "I'm a lesbian, this is my girlfriend," or I never said, "This is my girlfriend." Like, I never did that. I just got this sense that it was not appropriate, but they never treated me badly and they never treated my girlfriends badly. Eventually, as time went on, we're talking about the middle 80s, the late 80s, they understood what was happening. It turned out I wasn't the only member of the family that was gay, and so that helped. But when I told my mother, she was basically fine with it and gave me a book called Ruby Fruit Jungle, written by Rita Mae Brown. I was 14 at the time, and that's really probably not a book I'd give a 14-year-old because it was a bit mature on the sexual side. My father, I didn't tell until I was 16. No, not even 16. How old was I? I was 20 when I told my father. So I did tell my mother before my father. But I feel like I was on a need-to-know basis with it because it didn't have anything to do with my family's life. So I didn't have any shame about it. There was no struggle that I had about it. I was even okay with my body. I didn't have the feeling out of sorts in my body like a lot of people talk about in the trans community. I was perfectly happy to be a lesbian for the most part. It didn't start to change until I was in my 30s, actually. It's just interesting to hear the difference. We're just two people and we have two different Hispanic families, but some of the similar, my family's Catholic. And I just think that you're right. There's tradition, there's conservatism, there's culture. There's a lot of things that are part of this. It turns out that even though those things were there and they could have been, quote, traumatic for us at the time, I'm like you. I don't harbor any resentments and I don't feel like I have any lingering issues as a result of that.
Right. And you know what? My parents met my girlfriend, and honestly, I was moved so much that I ended up crying because my mom sent me this really nice message saying that she's very happy that I found love, and she's very happy that this woman is so nice and all just positive things. And again, what more do I want? That's all I want, really. I don't need to drag her into, like, I don't know, LGBT culture or anything like that. That is enough for me. For her to still accept and love me in her life and to also embrace bringing my girlfriend into it, that's it right there. Despite, of course, the way I grew up, it wasn't probably ideal, but if I got to this place and this is where I'm at and they're okay with that, man, I'm good.
Absolutely. Let's move up in time because you're talking about something that's happening more in the current time period. So you were born in Puerto Rico and then you were raised in Florida and then you moved to Denver, Colorado. Would love to hear the story behind that. Then you went to Kansas and now you're in North Carolina. What took you to Denver and Kansas and North Carolina?
Well, thankfully, I had the job where I could easily transfer to another state, so that helped. However, the reason I left Florida, which I had mixed feelings about leaving, I didn't want to leave because of family, but I also wanted to leave because of family. I felt like there was a healthy distance that needed to be created. Again, like, we were a very close-knit family. At home in Miami, it's just my mom, my dad, my sister, and now my sister's got her husband and kids. My brother's in the military, so he's still overseas, but that's it. The rest of the family is still in Cuba. Some of them, not many, are in Spain, but for the most part, it's just us. So we grew up very close. During that year, 2012, that I was thinking about leaving, my brother actually joined the military, which was my final, all right, I'm going to. Because him and I are very close. And for him to leave and for me to stay there with my parents and my sister, even though, again, I love them, but my brother and I have something that's just, he just gets me in every way. So it sealed the deal, and then I transferred. So I left, my brother left the military a couple months after that. Of course, this broke my parents. But honestly, it's still the best thing I did because I had really not grown up a lot. Because again, I grew up in a house where Cubans and Hispanics in general, they love this idea. They love the idea of you staying there with them forever.
You are listening to the Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Keg. Our guest this hour is Mars Fernandez. We hope that you have been enjoying Mars' story and the comparisons between two guys and Xander Keg. Xander is first generation Mexican and Mars Fernandez, growing up in a Cuban family, raised in Miami, Florida. We are taking our first commercial break. We will be back shortly.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
We are back from our first commercial break. You are listening to the Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Keg. Let's pick up where we left off.
I could be 60 and living at home, and my mom will still do my laundry. And I didn't want to do that. I need to grow up. So I left, and I was forced to learn things, doing laundry at the age of, I don't know, 20, what was I, 24 or something like that, 25? So that's how I ended up in Denver. And Denver was where I started really thinking about some of this gender stuff, but not too much, but enough to where I think it was getting to me. Just the fact that I think I was still trying to not be completely me, I guess. You know, I was very uncomfortable with just knowing that I was masculine. Even being with girlfriends, even they would tell me that the experience of being with me was different. It didn't bother me. Like, I wasn't insulted, but everything just kept adding to this list of things that was making me extremely dysphoric.
When they said something was different, was it, you're different from other masculine girls I've been with, you're more like a guy?
I feel like people are going to be bothered by me saying this, but, and I understand how it sounds, okay? But this is what they were telling me, that being with me felt different. I think what they mean is because they were maybe used to the lesbian experience being in a way that I wasn't fulfilling for them, which wasn't reason for them to break up with me, but they noticed it was different. So that's why I put that out there. But I understand how it comes off.
Well, wasn't that the same for you, Xander, with girls?
Well, yeah. I was more interested in dating women who weren't from the lesbian community. I often ended up with women who were either bisexual, knowingly or unknowingly. I had two girlfriends in a row, actually, who were engaged to be married to men and had never been with a woman. They left their relationships to be in one with me. I didn't really like being in relationship with women who were part of the lesbian community for a while. What they would say to me, these women, is, you're the best of both worlds. You look like a boy. I was nice like a girl, or I was attentive to them. I was softer. So there was a sense in which they liked that juxtaposition of how I looked, how I carried myself with a lot of confidence and swagger. And I would often be called charming. I don't know if that's a good thing or not, but the way I presented myself, but they liked that I knew what it was like to have menstrual cramps, for example,
Yeah, I relate to that. Probably the last few exes were bisexual, and I didn't know that I would love that, but I do love that because they didn't get too weirded out by certain aspects about me. So I completely get what you're saying. I understand why we need community, I get that, but I've still never been big on little groups like that. Didn't really care for it. My last exes, for sure. Being bisexual, it wasn't like the other ones. And I'm okay with that. I think it created a more comfortable dynamic between both of us. So I totally relate. I relate to that a lot.
Well, then I ended up marrying one, and it's been a good 22 years we've been together. So
Crazy. Congrats.
thanks. So then you went off to Kansas.
Yes. The only reason I went there, unfortunately, because I don't like that state at all, I was living in Denver. I was dating this girl online. And I tried to live there for a little bit. So I did. I moved to Kansas. It was terrible, so I convinced her to live in Denver with me for a bit. So that's how that happened. And then North Carolina, honestly, I moved out here because I didn't want to stay where I was, which was in Kansas, 2019. That whole relationship fell apart, and I didn't want to be anywhere near Kansas State. I was being very dramatic about it. I was like, I got to get out of this whole area of the United States. It sucks. So North Carolina was an option to move to because I had friends out here. And then also, I debated Florida, but like I was saying earlier, even though my family's in Miami, it's just so congested and just crazy expensive out there. And I do like the quiet. So I came out to North Carolina, visited, fell in love with the state. I think I'm gonna give this a shot. Came out here. Also, to be brutally honest, it did help that there was a friend of mine who's got a sister who I was very interested in. So that might have also helped. But I love this state because it's got a few cities, but a lot of outdoors that I can do. So I am very, very happy with living here. That sums up why I am where I'm at.
Well, I have also moved around a lot. We talked before we started recording that I went to college in Denver, so that's something that we had shared. And I had lived in Florida before. I live in Florida now, but I had moved out here for graduate school in 2000, and I was down in Fort Lauderdale for a couple of years for that. And I also lived in Arizona and Utah a couple of years in each of those places. So mostly in my 30s, I moved around quite a bit because I went to college and then I went to graduate school and then I was just having fun and enjoying that time of my life. And so it was nice to be able to live in several different places. For people who have not been, Arizona and New Mexico and Colorado, it is beautiful out there. It's a different kind of beauty from North Carolina, obviously, but which I haven't been to, the Carolinas or the Dakotas. Those are the only states that I haven't been to.
I agree. I love Colorado. And honestly, I'm one of those weird people that I love moving because I like new things. I also love driving. So it's not that difficult to convince me to move to another state. Definitely a beautiful state here, though. You should come out and visit.
Yeah, I will. I was thinking about how I first learned about you, and I think it was through your YouTube channel and also through your affiliation with the Gender Dysphoria Alliance, which I was loosely affiliated with for about 5 days.
That was a mess, man.
It was a
Yeah.
mess. It was a mess. As a matter of fact, an article just came out in The Sun talking about my experience with the US PATH Executive Committee in their response to my involvement with the GDA. But one of the things I mentioned even when I was just reading your bio is that you're all over the internet and you do have these two YouTube channels. The Upper Hand Mars one is the one that I'm most familiar with. I'm just curious, partly maybe it's your generation. I'm wondering why start a YouTube channel? My wife told me 10 years ago, you should have started a YouTube channel 10 years ago, and I never did it. And if I had started it way back in the day when it was a baby platform, who knows, I could be one of those people that has millions and millions of followers and that'd be my paycheck right now. But you do have a YouTube channel, it is popular. What prompted you to start your YouTube channel, the Upper Hand Mars one in particular, to start with? And then what has that experience been like? There's probably positive and negative experiences for that.
As far as the YouTube channel, I remember it was very early in my transition, but I was on Twitter already and I had seen all kinds of things that were being said. A lot of which weren't true, and most of them, especially coming from the trans community, were the same opinions being just repeated over and over again. And I was getting exhausted by the same takes. So at the time, I was frustrated and I thought, I'm going to start a podcast, which is what I was going to do because I wasn't a fan of being audio only. And I did start a podcast called Transbra with a buddy of mine, Alec, who he kind of stepped away from the internet mostly, although he's on Twitter. So we started that, and really it was just going to be a conversation about transition and what it's like between two trans men. That was it. But a few months within doing that podcast, I was convinced by a friend of mine who doesn't really make too many videos, but Rose of Dawn, she convinced me. She said I should just do videos and get off the podcast to YouTube videos. I converted them to videos. So that's what convinced me to get on YouTube. It wasn't as scary as I thought it was going to be. But ultimately, the driving force behind making YouTube videos, and it was because I wanted to share my thoughts. I wanted somebody else to say something different because about transition and what it was like, it was always just the same things being said over and over again, and I was getting very exhausted by it. Just as an example, men can get pregnant, okay? So I didn't, it was just so infuriating. I know why they're saying this, but they never unpack it, and so it just sounds ridiculous. And so I want to be able to clarify what they're saying, why they're saying it, and what they really mean. So that was that. But also, to be honest, I've always enjoyed making people laugh, and I like making videos. It's fun for me, especially when I roast myself. I find it fun. So that's taken on a whole other thing. And so this other channel with my friend Justin is really just talking about like political stuff and just off the wall stuff. It's called Two Dudes Kind of. So it is, right, once again, poking fun of myself, but I enjoy that. Nowadays, with everything being as political and insane that it is, I find it useful to go on the internet and share your voice. Not everybody has time to go to a protest or start a protest. So I say counter things on the internet. Well, why not? So yeah, I enjoy it, but also I feel like it's necessary. Like I said, I was gone for like 6 months because of personal stuff that was going on. And now I'm back. I'm feeling a lot better. So I'm pretty stoked to see where this goes again.
In the early days of your transition, what were some of the resources or influences? Had you heard about Jameson Greene's book, Becoming a Visible Man, or Max Valerio's book, The Testosterone Files? Were you following, say, Ryan Solins on YouTube? Did you know about these older trans guys, some of them pioneers really in our community?
I had heard of a couple, but I never really looked into buying their books, to be honest. I personally find it very difficult to sit down and read a book, so that's probably why. But as far as, I guess, if we're talking about getting information and influence and such, there were maybe two trans men on YouTube. One is still on there, barely makes videos. And they were the types that would basically transition and then just go live life. And I wanted to see if that was possible. I wanted to know that does transition have to be my identity? Because I didn't feel that it was. Not then, not now. I've never felt that I am trans because I want to be trans, or I am trans and I want you to be trans. Like, this has never been my thing. My thing has always been I am very dysphoric with my body. I feel as though living in the most masculine way that I can be, which is to present like this, to where people read me as a man or think that I'm a man. That for me is a good place to be. I'm comfortable where I'm at. But I didn't want to become my identity. And that's my problem with like a lot of stuff online is that everybody's so like caught up in you are that thing that you say you are. And I don't want that to define me. So it was very helpful for me anyways to see people that are just living their life. They got married, they have kids, they're growing old and they're still transitioning. That's great. That's the kind of thing that for me was helpful because when I went to therapy for my gender dysphoria, that was one of the things that I was concerned about still was, well, my only concern was like, okay, well, I know there's going to be health risk. I want to know that I'm able to grow a little bit older. I'm not saying I need to live till I'm 100, but I want to know that there's a chance for me to live a normal life, whatever normal is.
That's the wonderful thing about being connected to the pioneers in the community. There's, for example, Jude Patton. He's an 80-something-year-old trans man that's been on T probably close to 50 years now. I know Jameson has been on it for over 35 years, maybe at this point. He's my mentor, so that's why I asked. For me, I found it really important to connect into the community at least to a certain degree in order to take a pulse. Is this a normal experience? Are the ways that I'm interpreting things or the kind of experiences I'm having or the things that I want to do, is this something that you've heard before? I like being able to bounce ideas off of him. And it's almost 20 years now for me that I've been in transition and I still regularly check in with Jameson. As a matter of fact, he's been a guest on this show 3 times, once by himself and twice as a panel. One of the guys on YouTube that you were watching videos, was one of them Electric Dade? Did you ever run across him?
Absolutely. Yes.
He's
Yes.
awesome.
I did. Yeah, he's awesome. I don't agree with everything he says. His videos, again, they were just so normal. He wasn't trying to become a trans YouTube star or anything like that. He was just literally sharing about what it's like to go from being perceived as same sex, as a lesbian couple, to a straight couple. The perception that people have of you now changes, how getting surgery affected his relationship with his wife. And now they have kids. I mean, they're a beautiful family. And yeah, very regular Joe Schmo, I think. It is possible. On the one hand, I understand how it is troubling to influence kids with this stuff. But on the other hand, if a guy like that is just talking about his family and what transition is like, is that troubling? I personally don't find it to be, right? This guy just wants to share about his family life and where he's at with transition. A lot of stuff within this trans community is very doom and gloom. Very, oh, nobody wants to date me, and everybody that doesn't want to date me is transphobic. It's like, no, maybe you just didn't find the right one yet. And so it's nice to see the other side of it. Like, hey, this guy actually found a wife. He's got kids. He's living a normal life, and not everything is doom and gloom.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think also that it's important for purposes of parents who struggle with their adult children and to hear those conversations. I think that's vital because in the earlier years, for instance, between LGBT humans, it was always a concern, oh, you won't be able to have kids. And we know differently now. So some adopt, some don't, some actually have their biological kids. But it's the same with trans people. It's normalizing the fact that we know who we are and we desire relationships, as you said earlier. We desire relationships that aren't necessarily out of the ordinary, just day-to-day stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd love to switch gears now because what Dr. An just said about we know who we are. One of the things that's come up more recently, right, within the last at least couple of years is because we as adults who have medically transitioned or socially transitioned, who live in the world as presenting in a way that's different from our biological sex, I think that's true for us as adults, right? We know who we are. And I think what's happening is because we know who we are as adults, some of us, not me, I wasn't one of these, knew when we were kids. I didn't have the idea when I was a little girl, I should have been a boy, I want to be a boy. I was just a tomboy and I was allowed to be a tomboy. So I didn't have any restrictions on that. So I never fought against it. I never felt like I was having to break out of something. What I see what happening now with, say, like the medical transition for minors that's causing so much heat right now in our community and outside of our community is that because as an adult, I say, I know who I am, that some trans adults will say, I knew who I was when I was 10. Therefore, any 10-year-old who says, I want to be, or I am, or God made a mistake, or whatever kids are saying, that we should then say, ah, they know who they are, and then put them on the medical track to transition. And I've talked about where I don't agree with that. Just because I know who I am now doesn't mean that my 10-year-old self knew, even though there are trans adults who did know when they were 10, and they say, oh, I would have had a lifetime of grief removed from me if I had been able to transition as a child. And I wonder what you think about this idea of not every gender nonconforming kid is going to grow up to be a trans adult. That's one of the reasons I don't like the idea of medically transitioning children, is because I think we're not giving them enough space and time to work that out, which will happen in adolescence.
I've never liked the idea of pushing this on kids, and I still don't today. And obviously now there's even more evidence as to why this is a bad idea for kids, because we see these kids, 14, 15, regretting transition and posting it on Reddit. Like, why did the doctors do this to my body? Why did everybody agree with this? I think we're losing sight of what we were trying to do. And I don't say we as in us here in this room, but what I think some of these activists and just the whole LGBT community was trying to put out there. Because I think what they're trying to say is, hey, it's okay to be gender nonconforming and people are different. So that's what they're saying, which I could get behind that. I agree. But they've
Me
completely
too.
lost sight of that and also changed the meaning of that, right? Because now we're seeing them just push this idea that, well, that boy's not like the other boys because he likes the color pink. So therefore, he must be trans.
The station that makes you feel good.
UK
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
We are taking our second commercial break. You are listening to the Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Keg. Our guest this hour is Mars Fernandez. Mars was born in Puerto Rico to Cuban parents and came out as a trans man in 2016. Mars began transitioning around 2018. Let's pick up where we left off.
So again, maybe that boy is gender nonconforming. I don't know, but let him figure it out. And so they've lost sight of that, right? And I think they've lost sight of that for a lot of ideological reasons, but they're also just so concerned with, and not just them, but I think a lot of people, a very liberal mindset is concerned with, we don't want to repeat history. We don't want to repeat any mistakes because of what happened with gay rights. I get that. But again, we're losing sight of what really matters here because we're afraid to repeat history. But I mean, think about it this way. I've often, if none of this was happening with kids, I really don't think it would be that bad. I really don't think there would be that much of a backlash. But because we've involved kids, and again, not we in this room, but because we're pushing this on kids, that's why we see so much more backlash. Just think about during fighting for gay rights, being able to have same-sex marriage, things like that. If all of that included pushing it on children, can you imagine where that would have ended if gay activists had said back then, like, and we must teach children while we wear drag about same-sex marriage? I'm sorry, but it would have gone down totally different. And maybe it would have never been achieved. And so, like, I completely get the intention, but the way they're going about it, unfortunately, they've lost sight. I think we got to bring it back down to 75% and just start with, maybe your kid is gender nonconforming, and what's wrong with that? Yeah, we've forgotten that. And it's so unfortunate because we're just, by pushing so hard with this idea that there are trans kids, we're just making the other side more paranoid in what they were already freaking out about. They were always freaking out, like, you're going to make all kids gay. Well, now we've basically said, like, yeah, you're right. That's what we're doing. And I don't want that because now we're just getting two extremes pushing against each other. And it's leaving people like you, me, and him. Like, we're now stuck here in this very awkward place to where I don't want any of those extremes. I actually just want to be able to have the freedom to transition if I want to live my life.
I think what needs to happen is what happened in the 1990s. In the 1990s, there was a group of gay people, gay lesbian people, probably bisexuals, who took control of the narrative. They took it away from the queer rights. So it was queer rights versus gay rights. And the gay rights people said, we want to get married. We want to be able to start families in the various ways that we can. We want to be able to serve in the military. We want to be protected in our jobs. We want to be protected in our housing. We want to be protected in restaurants and hotels, right? We want all of those protections. Whereas on the queer right side, they were more into completely deconstructing and tearing apart the fabric of society to remove heteronormativity and these kinds of things. And they didn't support military. They didn't support marriage. And so they wrestled it away from them and then went out and had conversations with people who were against same-sex marriage, largely the religious right, and found a way to find common ground with them. And what a lot of people don't know who weren't paying attention or weren't alive or weren't adults back then is that when the same-sex marriage when the court hearing happened, one of the lawyers arguing for same-sex marriage was a very conservative Republican lawyer because he was arguing for family and tradition and faith in some ways, because faith was also a component of a lot of the people that were more into the gay rights versus the queer rights. They didn't reject religion. I've been proposing quietly amongst a select group of people, we need to do that again. We need to basically be, this is trans rights and that's queer rights, or change it, change the language a little bit and find a way to move us forward and pull us out of this, I think, downward spiral that we're getting sucked into. And yeah, I think you're right. I think it's because of the kids. It's, everything would be fine. Everything was fine. We had the Affordable Care Act that gave us access to all of our transition medicine and surgeries. We, in practically every state in the union, we could get our IDs changed and our birth certificates changed. And we were able to get passports changed years ago at the federal level. So there were a lot of ways in which we were moving in the best direction possible. And then all of a sudden, something happened.
So a couple of things. I think you were talking about Prop 8. Is that right?
Yeah, well, Prop 8 was in California. I'm talking about when it was on the federal level, when it was on the national level, and they had to argue at the Supreme Court level.
Going back to the kids, I interviewed a number of people, parents and grandparents, and I met some of those kids who were, for purposes of illustration, 2 years of age and 5 years of age. And those are the persisters. They never give up. They continue demanding that people listen to them and hear them. But I've heard stats repeatedly mentioned that it's 2% of the population. I think it's more 1% of the population of these children. I'm not talking about in all, in general, of the trans population, but 1% of the population involving children.
Wait. Yeah, can you clarify that? You're saying that there's 1% of the population is what exactly?
So you have persisters who, from very young ages, insist that they are of the gender that is not their biological sex. So it's the opposite. And they grow up living as the opposite gender and never veered from that track. I don't think it's 2%. I think it's more like 1%. I think the 2%, it's everyone lopped in under that figure, from what I can gather. And in fact, some statisticians say it could even be more. But for purposes of children insisting they are who they are, who have made it on record, I'm not talking about those who are off record, who have made it on record, it's more like 1%.
The problem with that is, how do we even measure that when it's so difficult to even measure any of this? Because if you're saying that I am trans because I am trans, whether you're on hormones or not, it really blurs. That's another problem I have. Like, how are we going to keep up with stats and understand how any of this affects anyone, or how many transition, continue transition, or vice versa, when we've literally just said trans is anything? And so going back to what you're saying, Xander, I 1000% agree with you. But the problem with these groups, which I've tried to do these groups since like 2018, they always fall apart, right? There used to be a group called Trans Rational that I started with. They fall apart because at the end of the day, we can't agree on anything. So show me a group that could agree on some fundamental things that we have to change, and I might be on board. But it just so happens that when you get several trans people in a group, I've never seen it work, man. Like, the only thing that has worked, which is why I wanted to join and I stepped away for other reasons, was the Gender Dysphoria Alliance. But it's working because that one's focused on more like medical aspect, right? But if we're talking about trans rights, well, we'd have to define what rights we don't have, what rights we're entitled to, what is trans, where we belong, should children do it, what about sports? There's so many categories. And I'm telling you, to find a group of, let's say, five of us that agree with on all of them has been impossible for me to do that. That's why I've just given up on that. But would it be the best way to go about it? Yeah. And I had a conversation with the Aarons the other day, and I was sharing the concern that I have, which is a lot of people have backlash on us. Whether you have been an activist that pushes this on kids or not, it doesn't matter at this point. A lot of people see us as the enemy, the problem, right? Because you're still transitioning, you're the problem. Oh, you agree that biological reality is everything, but you still have a beard. You're not detransitioning, so you're still the problem. You can't make these people happy. And so I accept that I can't make these people happy, and a lot of people are going to continue to see me as a threat. However, when we're talking about what is it going to be like to be a trans man in 5-6 years from now, I don't know. Am I a little bit nervous about what that might look like? Absolutely. How can I fix that? How can we de-escalate the problem? And the problem could be de-escalated. Again, when I'm talking about just adults that are transitioning, have been transitioning for 5 years, 10, 20, what that life is going to be like, that group does need to take place. Because everybody's concern, and rightly so, is how children are being affected and female rights and all this stuff. I understand that's the focus, but at some point we're going to turn around and, well, now what do we do with these trans adults? What should we do with them? And I would like to be able to get to that point before society says, what are we going to do about the trans adults? Not to sound hyperbolic or anything, I'm not trying to scare anybody, but naturally, once they figure out the kids thing and the female sports, they're going to keep climbing up this ladder because it is a problem to them. We create a problem in society. They want to fix it. And I do think we should fix it, but we have to be able to agree on just basic definitions.
I think the discord that you describe is at a level that makes it very difficult to move forward. And so every time we do move forward, we move 10 steps back, and then we have to navigate that terrain all over again.
Exactly. It's unfortunate. Well, it really is, because none of these people will even talk to. It's happened since day one. Even before my podcast became YouTube, everybody was already hating me, sending me nasty messages, telling me to just detransition. You're not even trans. People that are supposed to be trans. And it's unfortunate. If we could all just sit down in a room and talk, I kid you not, you will find out that no, I don't hate trans people. And no, I don't hate myself. But guess what? Transition is real. And what happens when you transition could be sometimes bad things to your body. It could, and we have to talk about that. And we could also talk about the good things that could come to your life if transition somehow balances you out and works out for you, which it has for me. But none of these people, we can't even be in the same room.
I think part of the issue is that, and this doesn't surprise me, is that most people don't understand what hormones do in the body, and that there are certain diseases, conditions, whatever you want to call them, that are triggered by hormones. And so when you start putting hormones into a body, it can, for lack of a better term, turn on a particular cancer that was dormant because it didn't have a high enough level of that hormone to turn it on. And so, but like you, I want to be part of the solution. And I think one of the things that Ann and I were hoping for the Umbrella Hour is that we were going to be able to tell the stories, right? Or have people tell their stories. We were going to share people's stories on an international level, which we've been able to do for a year now, and for people to get to know us in that more direct way. And so I think we've accomplished that, and we're going to keep doing that. And we're so happy that you came on the show today, Mars, and shared more of your story with us. And
thank you for having me. Like I said, it's been a while since I've taken out an interview, so this is awesome. I'm glad you guys are having these conversations. I'm always happy to see other people that are in the LGBT come out and start doing their own thing and sharing their voice. I think it's really important. I think a lot of people are still unaware that there are actually some normal individuals that happen to be trans, and this is a good way to show them. So thank you. That's basically all I'll share. I don't have anything major going on in my life or seeing projects or anything like that. Just hit me up at YouTube Upper Hand Mars, or at YouTube at Two Dudes Kinda. Yeah, subscribe, like, whatever. But man, I'm glad that I'm on here. Thank you both. If you think of any ideas, suggestions, things that you think we should be doing, just let me know. I'm open to hear them out every time, so let me know.
Thanks, Mars.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Umbrella Hour with Dr. Ann and Xander Kagg. Our guest this hour was Mars Fernandez. Thank you for listening. We hope you join us next time.